People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's People of Note, the last one for 2024. And I'm pleased to tell you that I have the veteran actor Mark Richardson here in the studio with me. I don't know if you've been to see My Fair Lady yet. If you haven't, you need to get to see it. It ends around about the 12th of January, and it is a spectacular production. It's epic, is the word I used. And Mark, my guest, plays that irresistible role, Alfred Doolittle. And so I want to find out more about him and his life and his career and his role in this musical. So, Mark, welcome, a warm welcome to Fine Music Radio.
Thank you very much, and hello to all your listeners.
I was just saying before we came into the studio that this Alfred Doolittle is very physical. You have to do a lot of leaping about.
Well, I've always been rather proud of keeping myself in shape. I have a little gym at home, I just managed to have stamina. And that's it, it's stamina. I'm not a dancer, but Dwayne Alexander, the choreographer who's done a superb job, is actually a master of making people like myself look like they're dancing.
Yes, and you do. I'm surprised you say, as far as I was concerned, you were dancing and dancing very energetically.
Well, not as surprised as my family.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they came down for the show, and my daughter said, nudged my mom, who is a choreographer, my wife Sandy Dyer, and said, "He's dancing."
She said, "Surely not." But you know what I found most interesting, Mark, when I discovered in the program that as a schoolboy, it was actually the role of Alfred P. Doolittle that ignited your love affair with acting. And here you are now playing him all these years later. Tell me about that story.
Well, I was one of the mana at school. And, of course, only the sissies were in the dramatic society.
Yes.
But one of my lady friends was very involved in dramatics, and we came up. I can't even remember what the bet was about, but she said, "Mark, if you lose this bet, you have to audition for the school play." And so I said, "Fine," not thinking I'd ever lose the bet. I lost the bet. And she asked me, she said, "Okay, you're auditioning. We're doing My Fair Lady." And off I go. Now, I came from the UK as a... I spent a lot of my informative years in the UK, so I had a good grasp of
Were you
access.
Born there, Mark?
No, I wasn't. I was born in Zambia.
Oh,
but,
okay.
My parents went back to the UK when I was a small child. So I had a very good grasp of accents.
Mm.
And because I knew I could sing, because I'd been a chorister at the church, and so I went out there, and sure enough, I don't just get into the school play. I play Alfie Doolittle. And the response that I got from the audience basically enamored me to becoming an actor, and that's exactly what happened.
So you never thought of becoming an actor before?
No, my parents, both medical. My mother was a pharmacist, my father was a doctor. And, of course, the pressure's on then, you know. You've got to go away and study. And they were the most fabulous parents. They were flummoxed because they'd obviously never had anybody with artistic ambitions in the family. My brother became a doctor, and my other brother was an agricultural scientist. So they said, "We need to ask questions," and they did. And we found a way to get me into theatre. It was a little bit of a stretch, yeah, to get into the theatre.
Mark, do you remember the sort of age you were when this Alfred Doolittle role came up at school?
Yes, I was 16.
Ah, so you were young.
Well, it's 49 years ago.
Good. Now let's calculate your age. But Mark, and this accent that Doolittle has, it's a Cockney accent, isn't it?
Cockney
accent.
East End, yeah.
And you could do it then?
I could.
As a result of your...
Yeah, just because I find that singers are far more apt to pick up accents. Actors sometimes struggle, but singers, it is tuning in to an accent. It literally
mm-hmm.
is.
Yeah. But just the role of Alfred Doolittle is really very important in the whole production, isn't it? Because when he goes to visit Higgins, there's quite a lot of wheeling and dealing that goes on.
Well, he is by far and away the most of the light relief that comes, and it's
Absolutely.
Very brash.
Yeah.
And so the audience do warm to him. He's a lovable rogue. And it's the most beautifully constructed piece. And it has its troughs and its peaks. And the way that it runs through the evening, it's a very long piece.
It is long,
which
yes.
worries producers today. Peter Turin, the producer, is absolutely fastidious about how long he can keep an audience in. But we did do very small cuts, which with Stephen Stead, our wonderful director. But it still runs long, but you don't realize it because of the way it's constructed. The audience, you don't feel them flagging at all.
No, and you don't. I was at the press night, and I was surprised to see that the first act actually goes over an hour and a half.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like that. And, of course, the first act has all the big songs in it. But then the second act, we have you to look forward to with, I think we can safely say, one of the show stoppers, Get Me to the Church on Time.
It is the most beautiful piece because you have everybody on stage, yes. barring the other principals, and the colorful set from Greg King with all the flowers of Covent Garden, and the beautiful band with Kevin Clark.
Mm.
But the musical direction is superb. So you've got this beautiful full sound coming at you with this epic display of Covent Garden with these sets from Greg King. And I'm just lucky enough to be doing it.
And even a barrel, a sort of wheelbarrow thing, no, whatever that thing is called.
Flower cart, yes.
Yeah. But that show, as you said, has got everybody on the stage, which adds to the visual impact, let alone the oral impact. And everyone gets into the spirit so well in the cast. It's a great cast, isn't it?
Yeah. So we do have, it's a Cape Town opera combination with Peter Turin. So rather like Sound of Music, which was another fabulous production from Stephen Stead. There are opera members in the company who have these magnificent voices, but a large proportion are from Lamta, from Dwayne Alexander and Anton Lating's academy.
Yes.
And the professionalism of this cast is outstanding, and their energy. And everybody loves the piece. I mean, it's I'd say through my years, it is seldom that you get such a happy show across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody gives their all. It really is the most fantastic energy on stage.
Well, we are certainly selling it well here. I know it's booking up a lot. Mark, what is your first piece of music? And you've chosen music by Grieg, the Peer Gynt Suite.
Well, I have got into classical music rather late in life. I've always been pretty eclectic with my music tastes. But along with Fine Music Radio when I'm in Cape Town, I used to listen to Classic FM.
Mm.
Of course, now it is still going. It's on the DSTV sites and everything. But unfortunately, the live studio situation fell away and another station took over, which is a perfectly good station. So I do enjoy classical music, but far more on the lighter side. So, yes, we have Peer Gynt Suite 4 in the Hall of the Mountain King, and it's the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Sir Thomas Beach, no less.
Good heavens. Thank you. That's the Hall of the Mountain King coming to its thunderous close there. It's from the Peer Gynt Suite by Grieg, and it was played by the Royal Philharmonic, conducted by the inimitable Sir Thomas Beecham. How about that? And it was the first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Mark Richardson, who plays the role of Alfred Doolittle in My Fair Lady, the Peter Tureen Cape Town Opera production that's running here in the Artscape Opera House and is filling up fast. We spoke a bit, I think, Mark, about the sets, but I just would like to go back to that because the one thing that struck me as quite extraordinary, first of all, they use the Revolve stage here at the Opera House, which is a hugely successful thing. And that study or library of Henry Higgins is just a sight to behold.
Greg King is a genius, and his eye for detail, which is what we're talking about here, is astonishing.
Yes.
So you can sit there in the audience and actually be totally taken away with all of the objects.
That's exactly what happened to me.
Yes, and it's period. It's absolutely fabulous. The Revolve, interestingly enough, is not the Opera Revolve. They actually have built that Revolve for this production.
Oh.
So they're not even using it. So that was added to all of the woes and troubles of getting this production on. And I think Rodney, the one thing about it is the size of the set. We don't see these type of sets anymore, physical sets. Everybody, and there's nothing wrong with them, but everybody's gone to very lifelike LED images and things like that.
Yes.
It is so wonderful to sit and see flies come in with beautiful 3D painted scenery. And Greg and his artists have done a fantastic job.
Well, I completely agree because, as I say, that study, and I did do exactly what you said. I sat there looking at the books and the articles, the objets d'art, the paintings on the wall, the lights, everything was there. But the same with the flower scenes, the Covent Garden, the complete contrast he got from the sort of elegance of Higgins to the dirty streets of Covent Garden.
I think the next thing is the costumes, sort of, because when you go to Covent Garden and you see all these characters from the East End of London and their costumes, the costumes have been so beautifully put together by the costume coordinator Marita Fisahi, and it's very hard not to fall into the trap of, oh well, we'll just busk that one. That can look a little bit like 1910, 1912 London. No. They've gone the full hog. And so whether it be the Covent Garden scene with all of these poor people walking around selling flowers, or whether it be Ascot, which is absolutely striking.
I wanted to talk to you about that Ascot scene.
She has nailed it down. Mm. It's the only scene that I'm actually very jealous I'm not in. I would have loved to have had one of those costumes.
We can't have you, Alfred. Alfred Doolittle in the... But what struck me about that Ascot scene is that, first of all, it looked beautiful because of the costumes, the hats, the designs of all the different hats, the black and white, and also the fact that the actors were deadpan, no smiling, no hint of an expression when they sing the Ascot gavotte, and that worked so well because it wants to make you laugh.
Yes.
Well, the fact that they're not laughing.
It's an iconic piece musical. And it's always, I think people always wait and go, let's see if they crack this one. Oh. Because it's difficult. I mean, those costumes have to be absolutely spot on elegant.
Mm-hmm.
And the performers, as you say, have to perform it with that much synchronization.
There must be rather frantic costume changes backstage during this My Fair Lady.
Yeah, again, I see, Rodney, I got off very, very, very lucky there. I've got three costumes.
And you stick.
Which I can't, I mean, I think back to, actually, my last production was Evita, again, here and overseas. And those costume changes were absolutely horrific. But in this one, yes, the ensemble have some, I see them scurrying past me backstage and busy, you know, with wig ladies and costume wardrobe ladies. Yeah, no, they do have a frantic time. Yeah.
Just on that subject, Mark, if I'm right in saying this, and a lot of people have said this, backstage at Artscape at the Opera House is really quite special, isn't it? There's lots of space. It's huge.
Yes, it's a proper opera house.
Yeah.
Thankfully. Yeah. We don't have very many operational opera houses left. The other two that I could mention would be the Saint Duplessis in Bloemfontein, which was phenomenal. I was lucky enough, obviously, to have played there. back in the day, and the State Opera. Mm-hmm. Both of them have fallen into terrible disrepair.
Terrible.
So Cape Town is so lucky to have this. It is fantastic backstage. The amenities, the rehearsal rooms, the rooms for the musicians and the singers to rehearse in, these little booths. Mm-hmm. It is actually the way an opera house should be, but this one has been maintained beautifully. And Alex from the opera company.
Alex Gabriel, yeah.
The CEO is an absolute joy. He has been so supportive. He comes and talks to us. In the old days, they used to sit in their towers and you would never see them, the CEOs. This man came and played the rehearsal piano for us.
I believe he was a very good pianist in his day, back in the day.
Well, he was perfectly fine for our rehearsals, thank you very much. The CEO coming down and playing rehearsals.
That's Kevin, sort of unheard of.
Yes, Kevin Clark was busy with his orchestra, getting them, you know, all up to speed for the opening night. So he came into our rehearsal room. No, the opera, this is something that Cape Town should be very proud of.
Mm-hmm. And I think we are, may I say.
Yeah.
And the other question I wanted to ask you, although you hinted at this earlier, the atmosphere among the crew, the cast, clearly is good because you can feel it. You can feel that this is a happy production.
I've been very lucky to work with the Cape Town crews over the last, Singing in the Rain, Evita, and Evita Repeated, over the last few years. And let me tell you that the crew from Cape Town are absolutely splendid. I mean, they've always got a smile. They always greet you. You don't get this on a lot of productions. And so you get this entire ambiance backstage, mm-hmm, of a cast and a crew who love each other. And I'm not being like all drippy soppy. No, we love each other. We literally do. And it's just a joy to come into work every night. But the crew are fabulous here.
Well, this is all good. And you feel it, as I said just now, you feel it because you're aware of the fact that this is a happy show and people... The curtain calls at the end, everyone looked so happy and so content with the audience on its feet and screaming and shouting. Now, your next piece of music, Mark Richardson, is Leonard Bernstein's Candide, the overture there too.
Candide overture. Well, it's something close to my heart because I did play Candide for Jeffrey Sutherland in NAPAC many, many moons ago. And it's the Florida Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by the man himself, Leonard Bernstein. Thank you.
That's an incredibly energetic piece of music, the overture to Candide, the music of Leonard Bernstein, who was conducting the Florida Philharmonic Orchestra there. And another choice, the second choice of my guest, Mark Richardson, on People of Note this week here on Fine Music Radio. And we're talking about My Fair Lady because Mark plays the role of Alfred Doolittle, an irresistible role in the show. But what I'd like to ask you now, Mark, is a little bit about your other work, because, for example, I can remember seeing you years ago in MAME with Joan Brickhill up in Johannesburg at the Civic Theatre many years ago. Gene Dell, Joan Brickhill, Janice Honeyman, Dennis Smith was quite a cast, and I think you played the young man.
Well, I played the older Patrick, who was a boy, but in the first act it's the younger Patrick who's a little boy. In the second act, I come back. In the first act, I was part of the ensemble. But it's quite nice to tag that onto the story about when I fell in love with theatre.
Yes.
So I actually went overseas. My parents decided, okay, go to London and audition. And I auditioned for the Webber Douglas Academy, which is a very well thought of academy in London. And I auditioned, which was terrifying. And then off I went to stay with my uncle and aunt in the north. And I waited to hear the results, and they accepted me, which was incredible for an overseas person. But in the meantime, I hated the UK so much, I begged my parents to take me back to South Africa. Then I thought I was feeling so guilty about all the money they'd spent and the effort. I said, well, let me do something, you know, sensible. Like everybody says in theatre, you must have something to fall back on. So I came to Cape Town University for 1 year, trying to do BCom. I probably was almost suicidal, hated it so much, was useless. And I auditioned for Robert Moore at the dramatic section of Cape Town, and he actually accepted me too. But oddly enough, I went back to Rhodesia as it was then, and I was in the Kenny Cantor pantomime, and a very dear friend in Harare, Salisbury, said, I know where you should be going. You should be going to Louis and Joan, Brickhill Burke.
Oh, Brickhill Burke, yes.
She gave me an introduction, and down I came for this company.
To Johannesburg, I think.
To Johannesburg.
Yes, yes.
And they auditioned me for, at that stage, They're Playing Our Song. And they fell in love with me, I fell in love with them, and they became my very first mentors. They were absolutely, as you know, they were incredible.
A huge impact on the theatre scene in South Africa.
I mean, the people, when you look at people's CVs and things like that, the number of people, certainly from my era, who actually were touched by that couple is extraordinary. So I very happily fitted in. And I started off backstage as well as understudying on their Playing Our Song. And luckily, a chap called Michael DePinner damaged his knee. I say luckily for me, because I ended up doing most of the run, because he was in a brace. So I ended up doing most of the run, and but backstage was so funny. Dennis Hutchinson, who does magnificent lighting on My Fair Lady, funnily enough, was the stage manager of that show. And he said the sight of Mark reversing through with this thong appearing, pulling furniture and set, he said, was something else to behold.
That's a good memory, isn't it? So then, was that your entry into theatre then, your proper professional entry into theatre, when you came under the guidance of Louis Brickhill, and Burke?
I was with Joan and Louis for the first couple of years. And again, I was supposedly meant to find something sensible to do. And I went to work for a company called International Harvester in the computer department. And I'd already been working on stage and backstage for a couple of years. And again, I should have learnt it the first time. I was so unhappy. And I went to these people and I said, I've got to leave. And they said, but you're so good. I didn't know what I was doing. In those days, it was the size of the studio that we're in now, computers. I mean, there's nothing like this little laptop over here. So they had these things, and you had to, they looked like top-loading washing machines, and you had these great big discs. All I did was follow instructions. And they said, but you're so good at it. We were going to make you the supervisor. I said, well, I'm gone. And I went to Joan and Louis, and I said, Joan and Louis, and they said, well, we've got nothing for you now. You decided to go off. So I became the mechanist backstage at Sun City, right in the beginning with Bedazzled.
Yes, with those huge spectaculars they used to do.
That's right. It was great fun. Mm-hmm. I was already used to working backstage, and it was still an avenue to get me back onto stage. Joan and Louis knew that. And sure enough, we came back to Johannesburg. I left Sun City when they left because I was really part of their camp. And we came back and we did probably MAME, which was on at the old Civic Theatre, now the Nelson Mandela Theatre. We had a great time doing that. And as you say, I played older Patrick and lots of ensemble parts, which that was a feast for the eye.
Oh, absolutely. It was a typical Brickhill Burke production. Almost, you want to say, over the top, but so thrilling. And seemed as though not an expense spared, or the costumes or the sets. Oh. The size of the cast, which seemed to me to be huge.
Well, that's actually a very good point. That back then, that was the case. If you did a musical, you had this enormous cast.
Oh?
Which, on My Fair Lady, we are a 36-member cast. Now, that is unheard of today. And that's exactly why you get this incredible feeling of an epic production.
Yes, epic.
We can't afford, Peter and producers cannot afford these huge casts anymore. A 36-member cast today, unheard of. Mm. And as you say, on MAME, with those riding suits.
Yes.
The red.
The red and the black.
Oh, God, it was beautiful.
It was a fantastic show. And it had a host, as we said, of fine. Of course, Joan played the part of MAME. I still remember her doing a head flip at her age. And the great actors like Gene Dell and Janice Honeyman and Dennis Smith and a host of others, we could run through it. I've still got the program somewhere. We'll have a nostalgic drink one day. But Mark, what is your next piece of music, which I see is Roger Whittaker with that extraordinary voice and with a Cape Town connection?
Yes. So Roger Whittaker, it sort of became like an anthem at the end of what was then Rhodesia, the last farewell. And Roger Whittaker in the mid-late 70s was very popular. Mm-hmm. He'd also had a connection with Kenya. So he sort of he was included in the clan of the white Africans, and I'm not being political at all, but everybody knew that the end was nigh for mm-hmm. Rhodesia. And his song, The Last Farewell, actually became an anthem for the Rhodesians who were having to leave and go to all parts of the world.
The ship lies rigged and ready in the harbor. Tomorrow for all England, she sails. Far away from your land of endless sunshine, to my land full of rainy skies again. And I shall be aboard that ship tomorrow. Though my heart is full of tears, it bids farewell. For you are beautiful, and I have loved you dearly, more dearly than the spoken word can tell. For you are beautiful, and I have loved you dearly, more dearly than the spoken word can tell. I heard there's a wicked war of late, and the taste of war I know so very well. Even now I see the foreign flag array, their guns on fire as we sail into hell. I have no fear of death, it brings no sorrow, but how bitter will be this last farewell. For you are beautiful, and I have loved you dearly,
more dearly than the spoken word can tell. For you are beautiful, and I have loved you dearly, more dearly than the spoken word can tell. Though death and darkness gather all about me, and my ship be torn apart upon the sea, I shall smell again the fragrance of these eyes in the heaving waves that brought me once to thee. And should I return safe home again to England, I shall watch the English mist roll through the dell. For you are beautiful, and I have loved you dearly, more dearly than the spoken word can tell. For you are beautiful, and I have loved you dearly, more dearly than the spoken word can tell.
Well, there you are. An unusual but beautiful voice, Roger Whittaker, and that well-known song of his, The Last Farewell, another choice of Mark Richardson, who's my guest. Alfred Doolittle, I should call you, Mark. he's in My Fair Lady, the Peter Tureen Cape Town Opera production. But we were talking about you working with Brickhill Burke and other things, and then you've mentioned other musicals you've been in, Evita, you've said a few times, Singing in the Rain you were in. So you've been around.
Well, I basically went from the Brickhill Burke camp to work for Peter Tureen.
Yeah.
And Peter, bless him, gave me the most incredible roles. I was doing farces and comedies. And, of course, I learned from the master himself, Rex Garner.
Oh, what a loss that was when he finally left.
And I learned so much from that man. He was difficult, mm-hmm. but he was prepared to teach you. If you were prepared to absorb his
and
great
and also presumably if he saw you had some talent.
Yes. You know, he'd often bemoan the fact and say when he was getting frustrated, he says, I'm not here to teach you, you should all know this. But he, in actual fact, he always fell back on the teaching aspect, and mm-hmm. that's why his farces that he did for Peter and his comedies were superb.
They were unbelievable.
Mm. And then that gave me an inroad because Peter was so well connected and still is so well connected that I got into television for a while and I did some presenting for teenage programs like Video 2. I ended up doing the presenting programs for Wipeout and for Mousetrap for Mnet. So I managed to get some sort of profile,
yeah.
which always helps with your stage work.
Of course, of course.
Because they love to see people from the telly.
yeah.
And so off I go.
As seen on TV.
But then it was down to Jeffrey Sutherland at the old Natal Performing Arts Council, mm-hmm. NAPAC, who then became a steering ship for me. Mm-hmm. And I did some wonderful work for him. I did Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. I did Candide, as we
was all this
mentioned.
In Durban?
Yes, that was Durban. But in those days, it was flourishing.
Yes, it was.
And they'd actually, the Pirates of Penzance was actually the first production I did for him. And that was actually called a hard hat production because that was the time that they revamped the entire place in the mid-80s. So it was actually called a hard hat production because they were still busy with the building while we were doing Pirates of Penzance. And Michael DePinna, who I mentioned earlier, he played the Pirate King and I was Frederick. Oh, God, what a show. What a show.
Is that the off-Broadway one?
It is the Broadway one.
I
don't think you'd call it off-Broadway. It was...
it's the Broadway one that had Linda Ronstadt
yes.
and Kevin Kline.
That was it.
Which is a sort of a bit naughty and mischievous, but yet... And I'm a Gilbert and Sullivan purist. And yet, I loved it. And you can get it on film now.
It is
but
amazing.
I never saw
all
the...
tongue-in-cheek. Well, I mean, Gilbert and Sullivan's already tongue-in-cheek.
Yes.
But
yes.
this takes a tongue-in-cheek look at the way that Gilbert and Sullivan did it. So it
was naughty because I think it was Alan Swerdler, the director.
No, Jeffrey directed that.
Oh, it was Jeffrey directed.
Alan was in it.
Oh, was in it.
Yes, he played. I think he played the Pirate King's sidekick.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Mm. All right. Because I remember they dressed up the pirates to look all sort of as though they were wearing G-strings or something.
Oh, no. We had one who had the cowboy, what do you call those, the chaps.
Yes.
But that's all he had on when he turned around. Yes.
That's
that was
right.
Very typical of Jeffrey, actually. Jeffrey loved that sort of sauciness. But the audiences loved it. Even the purists used to come to that. And that stage, because what do they call it? The last outpost in Durban.
They did.
There were a lot of people who were Gilbert and Sullivan fans, and they would come and just love it to pieces.
Oh, but it was a great show. Yeah. I mean, the original is always great.
Of course.
But that Broadway one I loved. Yeah. It even had Angela Lansbury in it in the film version thereof.
That's right.
So you were with NAPAC for a while, were you?
Well, I wasn't actually there. I was imported in to do these shows.
Okay.
I was still working up in Joburg and still doing whatever I could get in terms of television work as well. And then I ended up, probably the last production, was it? I'm not sure. But I did what they called the trilogy, which was actually, in theatre terms in South Africa, was an event. It was when we did Candide, Sweeney Todd, and Sweet Charity as one group of people. And what Jeffrey very cleverly did, he got basically the entire company were principals, and all the principals would then play ensemble roles when they weren't in principal roles.
Oh, okay.
And we did this almost in repertory, so we would rotate it, and then on the last day we did all three in one day, so that people could come down from Johannesburg and actually book and see the entire thing. It was the most exhausting and most incredible event anybody in that cast had ever been a part of. And it was fabulous, yeah.
And clearly memorable.
Oh, I mean, people still talk about it today. And unfortunately, you know, it sort of gets lost in the mist of time.
Yeah.
But, it was something that people would still talk about of my era. And then I had to stop touring because my wife and I started a family. And my wife has always been extremely energetic and is the breadwinner. So I decided, I told Peter I couldn't tour anymore because I was still working for Peter a lot. And so obviously if you can't tour, then Peter can't use you.
Yes.
Which was understandable. And so I started bringing up my kids, and I was like house dad, except I was still able to do the odd corporate and things like that. So I was away for a long time from live theater per se. And then once my kids had grown up, which you can imagine, that was quite a big stint. And obviously doing a couple of television things, but that was it. And then I phoned up Peter and said, Peter, I'm back. I can now tour. My kids are old enough and ugly enough to look after themselves. And that is when I managed to get into Singing in the Rain, which was, you know, one of these international tours that Peter does with overseas companies. And what an experience that was. I went to places I'd never been, obviously, New Zealand and Singapore and all these places. That was really what brought me back on track until 2019. Evita closed in China. I came home and we all shut down.
The dreaded COVID arrived. Oh, my goodness. And we know well how that affected the entertainment industry, the theatre industry. I would like you to choose another piece of music, Mark. Hello, Dolly.
Well, there you go. Hello, Dolly. And I had to have Barbara Streisand and Louis Armstrong because that's what people remember. I mean, Carol Channing, yes.
Yeah.
Bette Midler, more recently. But yes, Hello, Dolly. Of course, as I've already discussed, was a very big part of my life with Brick Hill Burks. And Hello, Dolly actually closed His Majesty's Theatre, which was a very bittersweet affair.
Hello, Rudy. Well, hello, Harry. It's so nice to be back home where I belong. can swell many, I can tell, Danny, you're still glowing, you're still crowing, you're still going strong. I feel the room swaying for the bands playing one of my old favorite songs from way back when. So bridge that gap, fellas, find me an empty lap. Fellas, darling, you'll never go away again.
Hello.
This is Louis.
Hello, Louis.
Dolly, it's so nice to have you back where you belong.
I am so glad to be back.
Are you looking swell?
Thank you, Louis.
Dolly, I can tell.
Does it show?
Dolly, you still glowing, you still crowing, you still
going strong.
I feel the room swing and the band playing one of our favorite songs.
Remember it.
So
it was my favorite.
Show some snap, fellas. Find an empty love.
Yeah. Darling, you'll never go away. Darling, you'll never go away.
Barbra Streisand and Louis Armstrong. What a combination. What a song, Hello Dolly, there. And it was requested by Mark Richardson, who's my guest on People of Note this week here on Fine Music Radio. We're talking mostly about My Fair Lady and your career, Mark, and all the things you've done. Mark is playing Alfred P. Doolittle, in My Fair Lady in a fantastic production here, running through to the middle of July. But the one thing I wanted to mention was the sound, Mark. So often one has been to the theater when there's singers on stage and a thing in the pit, and the sound sometimes is just not right. Either it's too loud, it's too brash, there are moments of distortion, but the sound here is absolutely perfect. The volume, the balance, everything.
A lot of it has to do with the actual room, and the opera house is built specifically for sound. So if you then get somebody like Mark Malherbe, who is the sound designer, in, and Peter has used him for years, and they understand how musicals should be sounding to the audience, then you're very lucky. You basically, everything falls into place. I agree with you. I've been to productions where even certain areas of the room are, you know, it's sparse, or then it's too loud, or... And Mark has found a magnificent balance in this show. And it's a very wordy show.
Well, it's in effect all about words, isn't it?
It's machine gun fire.
Yeah, like the Hill and Sullivan Patter songs.
Yes. And so if the audience can't hear these lines, you're lost.
Yeah.
And Mark has done a superb job with the sound. It's absolutely splendid.
And talking about Higgins, you've got Craig O'Barney as Henry Higgins. And I remember when I heard that he was going to do it, I thought, wait a minute, I've seen him in Sound of Music, where he was lovely. But then I've seen him in things like Buddy Holly from years ago and in the Rocky Horror Show as Frankenfurter. So I thought, now, can he do Henry Higgins? And was I surprised, pleasantly surprised?
You and everybody else that spoke to me said, Craig. And I went, Craig's my mate. I said, you just watch. And boy, has he been a revelation.
Absolutely.
A revelation. My wife came to the opening night and she knows Craig really well. And she said, he is absolutely superb. My wife does not get impressed very easily. And she said he was absolutely splendid. Now, you include that with the voice of Brittany Smith and Leah Marie, who alternate the part of Eliza. And it's just fantastic. The chemistry that goes on between them is palpable.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Pickering.
Ah, yes, Pickering.
Now, Pickering is often a part which sort of disappears into My Fair Lady.
Yes, yes, yes. But here it definitely didn't.
Well, and guess why? Because you've got a superb actor, Graham Hopkins making the most of the part, and he is delightful. He really is.
And you can always see he's always doing something. He's not just sitting there. He's not a wallflower. And I've certainly seen Pickerings that are. You sort of wonder why they're there.
Yeah.
But he's so good at making his presence felt. And I thought the chemistry between him and Henry Higgins was great as well.
Yes. Once again, the two of them have managed to pull off a wonderful relationship in this piece. Graham, I've known for many, many years. And he never ceases to amaze me. And he's got a great depth of talent. He can play all sorts of roles, but Pickering, he has made his very own.
But he has done Henry Higgins in the past, hasn't he?
He played Henry Higgins about, I think he told me, 32, 34 years ago.
Wow.
And I said to him one day, I said, is it not strange, sitting, playing Pickering and now watching Craig do it? And he said, not really. He said, I love playing Pickering and it's just a joy to be actually able to watch other people playing something that you once upon a time had.
Yes, working hard, which Higgins has to do.
What a piece for Higgins.
You know. And as you said just now about the words, what did you say, shotgun, what word did you use?
Machine gun.
Craig is excellent at that. You can hear every word he says in those songs, those very, very wordy songs, I'm an ordinary man, or why can't a woman be more like a man? That you can hear every word he says.
Now, the danger with Higgins is that you get a person who might play it where he'll come across as misogynist. Craig and Stephen together, Stephen Stead, the director, have managed to have this wonderful, warm side. Yes, he makes all these dreadful, chauvinistic statements during the show, but you always warm to him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very difficult sort of balance to make. And I think they've nailed it because, you know, that warmth that you get with the two Elizas is just extraordinary.
Yes.
And it never comes across as crass.
But the other thing, talking about the cast of My Fair Lady now, the smaller roles, Mrs. Pierce, for example, and Higgins's mother, and also the servants in the house, you know, where they have those ensemble passages, are all lovely, and they look the part and sound the part.
Adrian Pierce, talk about, you called me a veteran actor earlier on, Rodney, I'll take issue with that anyway, but I am. And Adrian, do you know, it's the first time I've worked with Adrian. We've known of each other,
mm-hmm.
and I knew her longtime partner, Dion Stewartson, very well. But we've never worked together, and it was just a delight. And she is superb.
She's Mrs. lovely.
Higgins.
She's lovely.
Lovely. And then Megan playing Mrs. Pierce.
Yes, that's quite a funny thing, isn't it?
And I've got my two boys next to me, Ryan Flynn, who is Ann Power's son. Ryan, who's an actor in his own right. I shouldn't say Ann Power's son, but he always does anyway. And then a lovely chap called Gareth, I hope I say his name right. I think it's Dutch Mason, next to me. They're my two buddies.
Oh. They're the ones who do with a little bit of luck with you the first time round.
They've become like my two sons. I just love them to bits, yeah. And that's the sort of thing that you're watching from the audience. It isn't put on. It isn't acting. We love each other. It's just great to be on stage every night with them. I look forward to going into the theatre every night.
Gosh, that is amazing. As I've said before, we certainly do feel it in the audience. You can feel the joy, not only of this fantastic musical, but of the cast enjoying themselves hugely.
And Rodney, what about Sandile in the role of Freddie?
Yes, and that was another surprise. I thought, my goodness, what's happening here? A person who's black playing Freddie, and then you think, well, why not?
Why not?
Why the heavens not?
And it's beautiful.
He sang that song, On the Street Where You Live, which is one of the other great songs.
Brought the house down?
Yeah, brought
the
house down.
I listen to it every night. You always go by the response at the end of the show. They loved him. They absolutely loved him. And why not? He's gorgeous in the role.
Do you sit and listen backstage when you're not on to what's going on?
Yeah. And I often actually wander backstage listening to it because it actually helps with your performance to get a sense of how the audience is responding. Every audience is different.
Yes.
That's why we're in this game.
Yes.
Every night is different. And so often I'll walk backstage and get a sense of how the audience is going. On this show, I don't really need to because the audiences are just eating it up. They love it.
Excellent. And you've got a long run because you're going up to Johannesburg and then to Durban.
Yes, unusually to Durban,
yeah.
Which is a nice little leg to do. It's very short. Obviously, it all goes with how big your audience is in those different centres. But I'm thrilled to be going back to the Playhouse. I haven't been to the Playhouse for, well, forever.
Forever. Okay, well, we have to stop raving about My Fair Lady now. Mark Richardson has been my guest playing Alfred P. Doolittle. Go along and have a look, and you'll see why I invited him into the studio. Mark, thank you. But your last piece, tell me about your last piece, just for tonight.
So another very happy memory for me. They're Playing Our Song was the first show I did when I came down here. Marlo Scott Wilson played this role in They're Playing Our Song. And the man who is my big brother in theatre, Michael Huff, was the male lead, but I have such fond memories of it. It's a wonderful show, a bit difficult to put on nowadays, probably a bit dated, but just for tonight, and it's sung by Lucy Arnaz, who actually created the role on Broadway.
Mark Richardson, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rodney.
Just for today, let me love you just for tonight. I'll close my eyes, and when I open them, my world will be all right. It couldn't hurt anyone, it wouldn't hurt anyone, just for today. Just for tonight, you'll be my dream. And when the morning comes to wake me, that's all right. It couldn't hurt anyone, it wouldn't hurt anyone. Just for today, I'll be my feelings, and I know they'll lead me home. And if we both come back a little wiser, it couldn't hurt anyone, it wouldn't hurt. Just for today, I'll be my feelings, and I know. And if we both come back a little wiser, it couldn't hurt anyone. It wouldn't hurt anyone. It shouldn't hurt anyone. Just walk to
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.